I've been single. Wolfric stopped on my sidewalk, turning to me in complete disgust.
That beast willfully soils one's belongings with his foul leavings?
Well, yes, I replied mildly. Don't act surprised, he's a cat. It's what they do.
Wolfric shook his head in amazement. And you wonder why I prefer my goats.
I took him by the elbow, propelling him to the door as Brendan's car rolled to a stop a few feet away. My ride's here. Play nice with the kitty. I'll be home before dark. Or you can call me if you'd like.
I may just do that.
With great dignity, he opened the front door where Gus was waiting. With a shrug, he stepped through to begin his afternoon with my familiar.
Leaving Wolfric with Gus?
Brendan asked, his green eyes gleaming with mischief. He knew both of them, and delighted at the possibility of awkward interspecies tests of will. At my nod, he put the car in gear and said,
My money's on Gus.
Chapter 24. Late for her own funeral. It took too long to drive up NY-86, but we made it despite my thoughts growing darker with each passing mile. Brendan was unusually quiet, his relentless good cheer muted by our grim purpose. When we arrived at the medical center across from Lake Colby, I let a single deep sigh loose that had been bottled inside me, pushing against my chest with each breath. Something was wrong here. My witch mark danced with nervous energy, and I felt a charge in the air around me. Without a word, we both crossed the parking lot and turned for the small morgue. The entire reason we were in Saranac Lake was because they had the closest morgue, the next nearest being all the way up in Malone. After a few calls in which he established his bona fides as a normal dude and not some random ghoul, Brendan found out our mystery dead girl was here, unclaimed, which led me to the moment where I was practically skipping to follow him down the long, austere hall. I struggled to keep up with him. He's tall and skinny, and he walks like they've just brought out crab legs at the buffet. We whisked through the first floor of the Adirondack Medical Center with no hesitation. If I've learned anything, it's to act like you belong when you're doing something that could be construed as troublesome. Asking to see a corpse was just that.
Let me go in first. The pathologist on duty seemed friendly, but I don't want us barging in.
I'll tell her we might know the victim and see how it goes, Brendan said. Just then, a pleasant-looking woman in scrubs walked out, reading the screen on her phone. Her scrubs were blue, her hair ash blonde, and she looked tired. She carried an empty coffee mug, and I waved Brendan to me as my charms fell in my hand without a second thought.
Hey, I...
was all he got out before I whispered the invisibility spell into the space between us. There was a sense of lightness, and then nothing unusual at all. Quietly now. I walked to the door with quick steps, sliding through as I pulled him in my wake.
Are we ghosts? He asked, bewildered.
The cooler was a walk-in, and I tugged him onward without a pause.
Sort of. We're invisible. Just be quiet, okay?
He mumbled something about witches and Halloween, but I shushed him as we took a look around the lab. It was empty of employees, for now.
Follow me. In here.
I directed as I pulled the long handle to the cooler. It clacked with a jarring noise, and we both jumped, only to settle as the door swung open to reveal a small, cold room designed to hold at most 6 bodies. The shelves were empty, save one large, covered form. It was enormous, and I knew it couldn't be the girl.
You're sure this was it?
I asked, as the door closed behind us. It was frigid, but not more so than our winters, and the fan blew cold, dry air over us so that we had to raise our voices to be heard.
Yeah, positive.
He looked around in confusion, then pointed to the left-hand side of the smooth steel table on the lower level. There were drops of something gleaming on the polished metal. He went to touch them, but I snatched his hand away.
Don't. Let me.
I took a pen from my pocket and dragged it through the closest drop of liquid. It wasn't red, nor was it black, but something in between. There was a pearlescent haze over the quivering blob
that broke apart into a kaleidoscope of moody bits. Looking at the end of the pen, I brought it close to my nose and sniffed. It was death. Not the kind of scent from a person who has passed on into the nether and is returning to a more natural state, but the corruption of something unclean. A thing that is not alive, but willfully denying the completion of its life. There are few things with that smell of violation, but I know most of them. There are ghouls and ghasts, mummies, even the odd white, or lich that uses dark arcana to maintain a place somewhere in the muck of existence, but not the being this fluid came from.
"What is it?" Brenton asked.
His eyes were round and filled with fear. "Smell this. I want you to know and remember." I held the pen out to him, and he took a delicate sniff, the noise of which was lost to the whirring fan above us. Brendan recoiled with animal instinct as the inhuman stench of a vampire filled his nose.
"That's unholy."
His voice was a rasp, and he coughed hard. "Vampire, there is nothing else like it in this world. Remember that, and it might save you someday, okay?" He nodded at my exhortations. I didn't think he would ever forget what he'd learned, but it didn't hurt to drive the point home, like a stake, if you will. I looked over his shoulder at the zippered bulk of the unknown person who stretched on the right side table. "We'd better look. Something isn't right."
If you think so.
He swallowed, and I swore his Adam's apple creaked like a screen door in a growing breeze. "I do. But still," I said, letting my charm spread across my palm, which I held up and out like a talisman against the unknown. "Unzip the bag, please." He didn't want to, but then again, neither did I. With more courage than any librarian ought to have, he pulled at the zipper in a smooth motion, stopping only when I waved him off as he neared the feet of the body. "That's good enough. Let's take a look." I took a breath of the cold air and flipped the fabric back with a magician's flair. "Oh, for spirit's sake!" I fought the urge to cry. It was Edward. Or what had been Edward.
"Oh my God!"
Brendan blanched, and I wasn't far behind. Edward hadn't been killed. He'd been ravaged. A fist-sized chunk of his neck had been bitten out, and there were deep, vicious cuts down each side of his chest. One arm looked broken. One arm was gone. I stifled a sob and looked away. He'd been a big guy, but now he seemed reduced, violated even. There's nothing pretty or dignified about death, and I felt a surge of anger at the loss of this man. I thought about his Texan accent and his presence. Brendan swore, a low sound of frustration and anger.
"What is that?" he asked.
There were drops of blood underneath Edward's leg, and in the middle of them were the marks of three fingertips. I felt my stomach drop. Someone had braced themselves to examine him, maybe, but even that idea seemed off. "Lift his leg for me?" Brendan quailed before finding his nerve when I gave him a reassuring smile. Bolstered by my unreasonably upbeat attitude in the morgue, he propped Edward's big leg with a measured heave.
"What are we looking for?" Brendan asked.
I shrugged. I wasn't sure myself, but I reached out with my power and let it trail gently over Edward's body. I was careful to think of reverent thoughts. It was critical to be kind to the shell of a man who had already been violated once. "I don't know, but it isn't here. There was something, but it's gone." We'd missed it, whatever it was. And I felt a black mood begin to drift over me like a bank of storm clouds. I flung the pen in disgust and barely stopped myself from punching something. It wasn't my most adult move, I admit it, but it seemed like the only thing to do.
"Would it be that?"
Brendan pointed where my pen gleamed near the aluminum transition marking the entrance to the cooler. I looked down. There, near my discarded rage pen, was the outline of a foot. A bloody outline, smeared, as if left in great haste. Kneeling to retrieve the pen, I measured the imprint with my hands.
Does that look like a foot of a young girl? It was narrow and long, with distinct ticking from claws. Not human. Definitely not petite.
Should you, smell it? Brendan asked. You know, in case it smells like a vampire.
He shrugged. His logic was solid, but I didn't need to smell the floor in a morgue under any circumstances. I have standards.
Why me? I countered.
Because you're the expert. He folded his arms with the confidence of a trial lawyer.
Well, I don't need to, because it's human blood, probably Edward's. Something came in here and took a bite out of him and drained him even further. I have no idea why, but I know we won't find out standing around here, so, if you please. I motioned to the door. Quietly, we're still under my spell, but we aren't silent.
I began to move and signaled him to wait with a sharp gesture. Pointing at the footprint, I knelt to pry something from the sticky outline before putting it in the pocket of my jeans. I nodded once, ignored Brendan's raised brow, and said, "I'll explain outside." He began an exaggerated pantomime as we pushed on the plunger to open the door. I peeked out to see the pathologist stirring a cup of instant soup while frowning. I didn't blame her. There was something incredibly sad about tiny dried noodles in a foil pouch. "I feel your pain, sister," I muttered, as we began to creep across the lab like a pair of cat burglars. We'd made it to the main hall door when the metallic thump of the freezer closing caused all three of us to turn in surprise. "Twice in one day. I must be seeing things." The pathologist cast a gimlet eye at the cooler and then at her soup. "I need a vacation. And some real soup." Her sigh was real, and I knew she hadn't seen two ghosts. But she'd heard a librarian, a witch, and a vampire. Just not all at once. And it was up to me to figure out who had been here first. Chapter 25. Sawdust Memories.
"What did you pick up in there?" Brendan asked with some interest.
We were in the car, moving away with that kind of studied nonchalance that meant we'd clearly been up to something, and were in the process of getting away with it. I prized the sticky little nugget of grossness out of my pocket. "Sawdust." Brendan smiled and pumped one fist.
"This changes everything, Carly. I mean, sure, we live in the middle of one of the largest forests on the planet, and yeah, every other person works with wood, or logging, or the forestry service, but by golly, you have cracked the case."
He grimaced at me with more sarcasm than any librarian should be allowed to know, let alone implement, especially in the car with a witch. "There's no need for your sass. I'm merely pointing out that this is, in fact, sawdust, and it was probably between the toes of whatever it is that took a bite out of Edward. So if you'd be so kind as to stow your tood, I won't be forced to redecorate your house with Thomas Kincaid paintings." I smiled sweetly to let him know the threat was real. He sniffed, disdainful as a French barmaid.
"Paintings can be taken down."
"Of course they can, dear, but you won't want to take these down, since they'll all match your new magically applied permanent tattoos. Imagine how popular you'll be with people over 70. Cat ladies, fans of shows like Castle or NCIS Topeka. You know, the tragically hip," I said, leaning in to examine his arm for an appropriate spot for the new ink. He smiled at me like a robot.
"I would like to enthusiastically apologize to my new and, may I say, stunningly beautiful overlord. Please accept my obedience as part of a..."
"Okay, good enough. Your skin remains free of snow-covered cabins and general stores with rusty signs. For now." He dipped his head to acknowledge our truce, and I subsided into a kind of daze while the scenery passed by us in a green flicker. I needed time to think. I needed Gran and Wolfric, but most of all, I needed answers. Witches don't like being kept in the dark. We're magickers, not mushrooms, and I resolved to find out who was spreading death on my lands.
Chapter 26. The Other Lone Wolf. Afternoons aren't sad or boring when you're snuggling in between creatures of two species who are both vying for your attention. Make that 2.5 species, since Wolfric wasn't completely human or vampire. We were sprawled on my couch discussing the morgue and what he'd seen during his most recent loop through the woods. Unlike me, he actually did smell the piece of sawdust, causing Gus to reward him with a look of pure disgust. Gus might be a cat, but he was remarkably fussy in the way an Italian grandmother might protect a white couch. Overcome by the unsavory presence of human blood, Gus leapt from the couch and strolled out to eyeball his food dish, which was perilously close to being half full. Naturally, that meant he thought starvation was imminent, so I began to mentally prepare myself for a plaintive yell from the kitchen.
"I am thinking that we have an uncomfortable solution facing us."
Wolfric trailed a lazy finger over my calf muscle, leaving it for a whirling moment on the bend of my knee. "Don't knock it till you try it." It was hard to listen, but his face was a steady and thoughtful consideration. "Mm-hmm," I answered, in my most scholarly fashion. His touch really did release the philosopher in my soul. Animalistic tendencies seemed to follow right behind that higher plane of civility, but for now I was paying reasonably close attention to his ruminations.
"You found sawdust, and there is a missing body. There are clowns inundating your town, a ringmaster from a circus that reeks of magical influence, and lone wolves coming out of the deepest wood to threaten innocent children. Is that an accurate summation of the current status?" he asked, his voice deep and careful.
"You forgot the horrible murder of Edward," I added bitterly.
"Of course, I meant no discourtesy to his memory."
He inclined his head in a formal gesture and went on. Manners were important to people from Wolfric's time, and my gran, come to think of it. But for Vikings, manners, or lack thereof, could get you killed.
"In essence, your town is in a rising storm of magical trouble. Blood has been spilled. I see only one solution to further the gain of information that can prevent more violence, and I'm not sure that you will like it."
"What?" I said, drawing out the words slowly as I cut my eyes at him with growing suspicion. I don't like surprises, unless it's my birthday. Or a holiday. Or some kind of food. All right, any kind of food, but no butter beans. They taste like sand and smell like feet. Other than that, food is good.
"Carly, are you here?" Wolfric asked.
I'd been overcome with thoughts of pie. "I am now, sorry. Go on," I said, somewhat sheepishly.
"I think we must go out tonight, and I think we must go to wherever the clowns are to be found."
He looked at me from under his lashes, watching for a reaction. "You mean go to the circus?" I felt dense. Of course we would go to the circus. It was logical, kind of creepy, and nearby. It was also the only unturned stone I had left.
"Yes, tonight.
And that means I shall need clothing that is conducive to people thinking I am just a regular dude, I believe you might say." Wolfric grinned and tried to give me a high five. I stared at him before bursting out into laughter. "Honey, seriously?" I looked at the nearly 6.5 feet of Viking languishing on my couch, his face a mask of confusion. "You are never going to be a regular dude, although I have to give you bonus points for using the current terminology."
"Can I spend those points on something? Like currency?"
He managed a decent leer, but it was a bit toothy, given the recessed points of his teeth. They made him look more wolfish than creepy. I found myself approving. "Later, save your booty points. We've got some magic to attend to of the witchy kind. I'm not strolling into that circus with you at my hip. Not without a masking agent of some kind," I explained.
"To mask what?"
He rubbed at the bridge of his nose with one knuckle, thinking. "Your vampire half. If I'm right, you won't be the only unusual being in attendance, and that means we can't be discovered if we want to leave those grounds alive. I don't know how many of them are magical in nature, but Gran told me I shouldn't go to battle without knowing the odds.
Sound about right? I asked. Quite. I like her strategy. It is sound.
He shrugged, then took my hand.
What shall we do?
Well, the first thing we have to do is get you naked, I drawled. His eyes flared from within as the possibilities caromed through his mind.
And where will this state of undress take place?
I grinned with a hint of malice. In the cellar. Looks like the spiders are about to get an eyeful of naked Viking. He sighed and began trudging to the cellar stairs.
I hope there is food at this circus.
With a pat on his bum, I assured him that there were all manner of fried things to be had, which deteriorated into a complicated discussion about the merits of funnel cakes versus donuts. In moments, we were settled, and I began to quiet my mind in preparation of casting a spell that would hide his light under a bushel, so to speak. Standing before me, Wolfric was impossible to ignore, and he'd be doubly so in a crowd of tourists. Any spell I cast would have to serve two purposes. His magical nature must be cloaked, and his anachronistic side, too. He was a man out of time, but my magic could protect him from the judgment of prying eyes. I began to select the components and settle into work. It is easier to hide something than change it, so I went to my grimoire and found the simple, powerful combination we needed to achieve this change in his perceived exterior. I poured consecrated rainwater into my scrying bowl, then followed it with oil of protection. The decoction smelled faintly of roses, and a smile spread across my face as the power began to grow within me. I could sense Wolfric watching me. It was electric to be noticed in such a way while I worked at something I loved so truthfully. We can begin. I lit a white candle and a black onyx holder, then placed it before his feet. He stood, legs slightly apart, and his hands hanging loosely at his sides. His chest was an expanse of smooth skin, and I envisioned the spell wrapped around him like the embrace of a mother. The smoke tailed upward into a rigid column, thin and gray. When it reached his eyes, I turned inward and drew hard upon my power.
Atarik, bien, I commanded.
He was a big man, and called upon the spell to change and protect the entirety of his skin, making him invisible to searching magic. The candle smoke spiraled around him like a living wisp, spinning even tighter until it blended into a mute glow. With a muffled pop, the smoke vanished inward toward Wolfric's skin. It's done. I sagged slightly, but in truth I felt energized, just as every good spell left me. After a series of restorative breaths, I asked Wolfric how he felt. He looked at his hands in amazement.
I feel quite good, almost as if half of me is no longer bound by the earth.
His head shook in wonder as a smile broke across his features.
It is most remarkable. I think you've made me into something new, Carly.
He stepped to me and planted a kiss on my lips with a fervor that suggested I keep learning new spells. The payoff was excellent. We have some time until the show tonight, and I want a bath. You can tell me about what to look for among the attendees, I said.
What could I add that you may not?
He seemed genuinely surprised, despite my mile-wide independent streak. I'm only one set of eyes. I'd ask Gran along, but I have the feeling that our presence will cause a ripple among the villains. You're hard to miss, even under my protective magic, and I'm certain they'll know me. I can only see so much at once. I spread my hands to indicate my unhappiness at that reality.
That seems sound.
He blew air from his cheeks while rocking on his heels. It was such a modern gesture. I laughed, then took his arm as we began to ascend the ancient stairs to the main floor.
Still, it is a great deal of time until we engage these potentially lethal beings.
Now it was his turn to leer. You're right. Bath first, and then we'll think of something, I said. But his lips found mine and ended further discussion. We broke apart reluctantly, standing on the polished floor of my hallway. His voice was low and rich with promise.
I am a master planner. I already have.
Chapter 27. A Tale of Two Tents. Walking in town as the sun set, I had one of those deja vu moments, made better by the addition of Wolfric. His fingers were twined in mine as I smiled and said hello to nearly half of the people we walked among. Being a small-town girl had its benefits. With Wolfric at my side, enclosed in the faces of my town, I felt a kind of security that made me smile. During my life, I've never really felt alone because halfway is my cradle and keeper. That's why I have repetitive moments, because things in a small town might not be identical from day to day, but they are, in fact, similar. There's a lot to be said for knowing where you're from, and streaming to the circus with my neighbors, I knew that I might be going toward danger. But in that moment, there was safety at hand. We were salmon hailing from the same stream, but I was the only one who knew of the bears and eagles lurking outside our perception, waiting to pick us off one at a time. We saw various friends and neighbors among the throng, and then Tammy Sincotti shouted to me with a gregarious wave that sent her boobs lurching in magnificent defiance of simple physics. Her hair was piled high and trussed for action, her blouse cut low for presumably the same reason, and she wore heels that stated in no uncertain terms that the man standing next to her was about to experience the full Sincotti. Tammy's sexual appetite is, as I've mentioned, something like that of a bear who's just emerged from hibernation. Instead of berries, though, her preference is men. All kinds of men. The dapper fellow standing next to her had a shy smile, a sleeve of tats, and a beard that smelled of cloves and orange. He was the rare hipster-lumberjack hybrid, and he was damned good-looking, too. But I suspected Tammy had her pick of men. It stood to reason she'd find a guy who exuded quiet, sexy calm in the face of her onslaught. We said our hellos. His name was Jeff. He was shy, and he lived in Malone. Before Tammy sized Wolfric up, ran her tongue over one lip, and gave me a body wink before pulling her prize off to the stands for some pre-game canoodling. If the circus was their shot, then the night at Tammy's would be Jeff's chaser. I hoped he was ready, and sent him a silent attaboy, for good measure. The look she gave Wolfric made him blush like a choir boy in August, a feat I'd thought impossible, and we walked quietly for a moment before he said, "She is quite a presence, is she not?" I giggle-snorted at his understated assent of her entire shtick before we arrived near the front of a Malay building outside the tent. I schooled my features and got back to business. I had things to look for, despite the delicious nature of Wolfric's expression. "Gran will be here, too. She's meeting us at the gates," I murmured, looking around for her tall figure. When I saw her, she smiled, and the three of us pretended to chat, all the while letting our eyes drift about for fear of missing a critical detail. Once seated in the cavernous main tent, I let the buzz of the room wash over me, picking single threads from the sonic narrative with both my hearing and magical senses. In truth, there was little difference for me at this point. My body hummed, both from my proximity to Wolfric and from using my power to observe and categorize so many sounds. It was a bit dizzying, and I was glad to be seated as the vertigo of witchcraft pulsed in and out of my mind like a distant radio. Wolfric sat, stoically curious, but Gran's head was turned slightly as her eyes adjusted to the haze of Klieg lights that hung from dark cables in the gloom above. "I pay attention to everything but the ringmaster, Carly." Gran's admonishment was well taken. I knew that his showmanship served as a cover from something darker, and if we intended to discover what he was doing, clues would be in our periphery. An indirect look was best, so I trained my eyes on the gaps where other performers would enter. And then the lights went down, and tinny music began to blare just as my witch mark flared into a suspicious heat. "Eyes forward, dear," Gran ordered, her lips so close to my ear that I could feel them tickle the fine hair of my neck.
"Ladies and gentlemen,
Welcome once again to a show of such mystery that reason alone cannot explain what you are about to see.
The ringmaster's voice was clear and modulated, like a finely tuned instrument. He stood razor-thin, tall, and groomed to perfection in a different suit than what he'd worn during our first visit. This evening's attire was a suit of midnight black, the jacket scrolled with a backing pattern of lurid burgundy that pulsed within the confines of the fabric. Cut away from his narrow waist, it revealed a starched shirt of rigid cotton, overlaid by lace shot through with lines of silver. At a glance, I knew the silver was real, as were his collar tips, which caught the roaming spotlights in occasional brilliant flashes. His mustache was curled upward in a permanent smirk, and the part of his hair was so straight you could build the pyramids of Giza with it as your guide. Tonight, he wore low-heeled boots under his slender trousers and, instead of gold suspenders, a belt of buffed leather encircled his waist. The buckle was a single hammered disc of pewter with gold chasing. Every nuance of his being was practiced and slick, and I felt Gran and Wolfric stiffen simultaneously when the ringmaster's black eyes passed over us as he swept the crowd with an imperious smile. He was almost certainly inhuman, but as to his nature, I couldn't tell from this distance without pushing hard at him with my power. I opted to sit tight, watching the room and letting my senses be filled by the cacophony of lights and sounds as the show began. 5 spotlights burst into being with a staggered series of pops. The ringmaster pointed a long, accusatory finger at each space, now filled with gymnasts dressed as vagabonds. Their artful rags tailed away from them as they began an intricate series of tumbles, flitting from one spotlight to the next, as they replaced each other in a dizzying display of skill and bravado. The dance, and you couldn't call it anything else, they were so perfectly attuned to one another, reached a frantic pace until each tumbler began to transit the lights, leaping atop each other to form a human totem. First, there were 2, then a third, presumably a woman, hurtled from the cupped hands of a hidden assistant to whirl through the light and plop on the shoulders of the totem. Reaching upward, she caught the 4th, an even smaller woman, who then locked arms with her receiver as they spread out, feet on the shoulders of the 2nd man in the totem. Extending their arms fully, they formed a frame of sorts, their feet solidly buttressed against the burly muscles of their base. And the 5th tumbler dropped from upward in the dark, after achieving an inhuman elevation with a single leap. The 5th and final member of the human tower landed with a delicate bend of the knees, then straightened with agonizing slowness. The display of power and agility brought the crowd to their feet, a susurrus of amazement breaking into a roar of approval as the tower dissolved when each member disembarked with nimble tumbles to land like oversized cats.
"This is only the beginning," shouted the ringmaster, his teeth a predatory gleam in the spilled light from above.
He was speaking the truth.
Wolfric, Gran, and I watched with fevered intent as the complexity of the show reached toward an invisible crescendo somewhere in the near future. At one point, there were more than 3 dozen performers in varying states of activity, a frenzy of color and motion that set my head to aching as I tried in vain to keep up with the shifting parameters of their routines. While each separate element went through their wild gyrations, I nudged Wolfric as something occurred to me. Among all the motion, there was not one performer without full makeup, and there were no animals. Wolfric's eyes locked onto a pair of clowns dressed as jesters. Their juggling concluded, and they began to slip out through the dimness as the spotlights pulled tighter in the middle where sword swallowers plied their trade. He kissed my cheek, nodded to Gran, and told me he was going to follow the departing performers to see where they went. It was a good idea, and his vampire side would let him maneuver silently, despite his great height. With my magic in place, there was little chance of his discovery. I squeezed his hand and watched him leap from the bleachers to vanish behind us into the night.
And now, we see what they do when eyes are not watching them, Gran said, her mouth twisted in a thoughtful quirk. Are they all magical? I asked, my voice low but insistent. I knew that humans were capable of remarkable things, but what we watched seemed beyond the talents of mere mortals. Gran nodded.
If not, then they are certainly augmented in some way.
She pursed her lips as two clowns tossed a third through a whirling set of three rings. The flying clown's body slithered through the air, touching nothing as he landed on his feet with a delicate twist. She was right. They might not be magical, but they'd certainly been touched by the ever after. The show evolved like a school of fish avoiding a predator, never remaining still or solid. It was dizzying, hypnotic, and verged into the realm of magic, defying the audience to keep a pace. I found my vision begin to falter when Gran leaned in and spoke in a low, firm voice. It's time to use your spell. Take my hand. Her fingers twined mine in a confident grip, even as the audience began to roar with approval at the show's building crescendo. Won't they feel it? I asked, knowing that magical beings affected by my brand might sense me should I push too hard. My power was nuanced, but then Gran smiled. The lights will dim for the finale. Bond with me, and we'll search together. I'll moderate your power, and my eyes will be closed as I reach into the ever after. You must use all your senses when the lights dim. We'll have mere seconds to see if and what is present with your brand. She took a breath and dimpled another grin at me, giving me a glimpse of the girl she had been long ago. I returned her smile in kind, thinking of how much I loved her. After my nod of assent, she added, I know your sight is swift and true. You're my blood, Carly. The last was a benediction, and I felt my chest flush with pride. Then the ringmaster raised a long hand to the heavens, and the lights went out. Chapter 28 A Game of Tag. With Gran's presence woven through my magic, it was little effort to open the door and let my spell burst into silent radiance throughout the tent. Unseen by the crowd, I became a nucleus. I was a focus, a gem, an original, and I was all of those things at once in a split second of divine energy that lashed out to detect the beings hidden among the good families packed into the stands around the ring. In the swirl of gloom, my eyes flickered like a guttering candle to settle on two glowing shapes that floated like disembodied sigils among the crowd. A flash of motion near the main entrance drew my eye to a third glyph that pulsed in cool blue and green. In a second, the bearer of my spell vanished into the night, but the original two remained where I had first seen them. Two, Gran. I was up and moving before the ringmaster could say another word, but I felt his eyes on me as I leapt from the edge of our bleacher to land with a muffled grunt. His gaze turned unerringly toward me, even as his voice continued on in a silken shout, unbroken and slick. Too bad, creep, I muttered over my shoulder as I moved into a low, dodging sprint, although everything I do is low. Okay, since I was at a half-crouch, I was more or less at the level of a kid, but with my adrenaline pumping, I covered the semicircle in seconds, despite my short legs. I could feel the vampires as I crept behind their section of bleachers, and, to my shock, they just sat there. I stopped directly left of their row, some 20 feet away, level with the pair whose eyes were diverted from noticing me. For now. I'm not used to magical beings behaving as if they aren't in the grip of a paranoid dream, so curiosity began to tickle my senses at their lack of activity. With charms at the ready and a spell on my tongue like a vicious rumor, I crouched, unseen, in the darkness between sections of bleacher, but they were too busy watching the ringmaster. That was interesting in and of itself. Vampires are often so old that their primary enemy is boredom.
to pay attention to humans was somehow beneath them. But they watched the show with rapt attention. If there was any lingering doubt as to the nature of this circus, it sublimated there and then. I squinted to see them with any clarity, and the first glimpse was revealing. There was one male, one female, and they had once been young, but their vampirism was well advanced to my trained eye. Dressed like tourists, the girl was a blonde, with alabaster skin and fine hair that curled around her like a living halo. Her lips were a small red bow under a thin nose. She might have been Russian when alive, and even with the angular effects of being undead, she was beautiful in the manner of a serpent. I watched as she smoothed her hair with long, pale fingers. In another life, she might have been a scribe or a musician, but now I knew all of that malignant beauty was designed for seduction and death. I knew she'd killed many. I could feel it. When she smiled, her teeth were even and white, the fangs hidden by the plump upper lip that curled up as she began to survey the crowd. What was she looking for? Her eyes flickered across the faces illuminated by the erratic, wobbling spotlights. I was really tired of those stupid lights. And if it wouldn't cause people to stampede in fear, I would have popped them all with a single word. I let discretion win out over my irritation, and the lights continued their relentless, spasmodic sweeping of the crowd. The biggest spotlight landed on Gran, lingered for a moment, then moved on, and I heard both vampires utter words of satisfaction in some unknown dialect. The male leaned forward in his seat as his hands began to flutter with excitement. He was average height, thin. Aren't they all? They've been on a permanent juice cleanse for who knew how long. And dark. Everything about him was dark. Eyes, hair, clothes. But, of course, his skin was that nerdy shade of pale you can only get from living inside for, well, forever. He didn't point in Gran's direction, but his body was rigid with attention. I knew that Gran was in no great danger, but the chance to pluck any information at all overpowered my initial desire to unleash a ray of sun into both of the bloodsuckers. How dare they even look in her direction? My anger began to boil, and I felt the delicious fingers of rage whisper up my neck to set my cheeks aflame. Unlike most witches who practiced caution, I throw care to the wind when it comes to my family. Anyone would feel that way. The difference with me is that I have centuries of magical energy at my disposal, and I'm not afraid to cut it loose. My charms flashed hot and cold in waves of reflexive emotion, and I had to forcibly bite my tongue to keep a spell from popping off like a relative who had too much wine at Christmas. It was touch and go, believe me. In my anger, I failed to note that the music announcing the show's end had come and gone. I had seconds at most before people began filing out. The ringmaster had vanished, and the vamps stood, glared at each other, and began departing in different directions. The woman came in my direction, and her lips were moving in what was certainly dirty words in some language. She was unhappy, and her pretty features were contorted in the kind of face that means someone is about to get hurt. That was interesting, because I'd assumed they were a couple, or at the very least, pair bonded out of duty to some clan. When she reached the end of the bleachers, the vampire stepped off. She didn't leap, or jump, or brace herself. She simply took a short step, fell, and landed with the impact of a feather. When her feet hit the sawdust, she grimaced, brushed at her dark pants, and began to turn away. Lips parted in hunger. She began to size up the crowd, and I knew it was too late to stop the male from feeding. Vampires fed nightly, unless they were young or wounded, a fact that led to tracking them easily. I didn't like knowing that they found a victim every night, but in a grim sense it made my job easier. I simply had to listen for screams or look for the signs. But the vampire in front of me? I was about to ruin her night. "Hey, gorgeous." At my word, she froze in place, then turned to face me with a quizzical half-smile on her lips. Vampires are notorious for being easy to read.
They have two effective settings, hungry and sneaky, and the angular beauty of their faces always reflect one or the other. In this case, unknown female vampire number one was hungry, which in turn meant that she was ready to turn on the charm at the drop of a collar. In the darkness between the bleachers, I looked like a perfect snack. A silly look swept over the pale oval of her face, which was hovering in the dark with near-luminous beauty. Her eyes were dark chips that glinted with a feral hunger. She was still in that creepy stance that vampires adopt when they're sizing you up for a bite. It set my teeth on edge that she regarded me in that manner, but after all, I'd baited her into doing it. Her fangs drew downward as she pulled at one lip with her long, mobile fingers in a playful imitation of flirtation. Nothing about her was real, I knew, but I had to give her credit. Without saying a word, she told me a story of lust and desire that confirmed I was in the right place at the right time. As for her, well, the next few seconds would determine how long she lived. "Yes, dear," she trilled, low and coy. Her lips pursed into something between opportunity and invitation. That's the problem with vamps. They don't see anyone as a threat. I detest that kind of arrogance in everyone except quarterbacks and lead guitarists. I held up my arm, charms jingling in happy metallic notes. "Quite a show we've just seen, won't you say?" She laughed at me, a hint of antiquity in her breathy rasp. "If you say so. I doubt you'll feel this way later, but for now, enjoy what you've seen." There was triumph in her voice. I know when I'm being left out of a joke. I don't like it. I took a step toward her. That gave her pause, but then her eyes went wide when she sensed my nature. Let me just say that being sniffed by anything other than a pet is just weird, especially if the sniffer is deciding whether you're good enough to eat. Watching her nose twitch like a hamster made me uneasy, but I covered the feeling with a question. "You've mistaken me for a human. Let's start with something simple. Why are you here?" I held my hand casually before me, and yes, I had two spells ready. One can never be underprepared. There was a short pause before she blinked, cleared her eyes, then blinked again. She was using some sort of racial sight on me, and it wasn't working. Score one for my family magic. "I'm a witch," I offered, by way of moving things along. "And you are, of course, a vampire. My boyfriend's a half-vampire, so you're getting the benefit of the doubt right now. And by that, I mean you aren't ashes." When she raised her blonde brow at me, I explained, "You know, toast, kablooey, finito." I made an explosive gesture with my hands, setting my charms jingling. Her eyes cut at the silver shapes, then came back to rest on my face. I had her attention. Lights began to come on in the tent, so I asked again with more force. "The things I need to know. Who, why, what. Stuff like that. You should start talking now." I cocked a hip and prepared to wait up to 10 seconds before I got an answer. She was going to run, and I felt her body tense just before Gran's voice rang out from behind her. "I think you'll want to chat, dear. My granddaughter has been rather polite, for the moment." The vamp twitched once, then set her feet without turning. Her head swayed as she decided who the bigger threat was, then settled again on me since Gran was an unknown. It was the smart move, given that any moment might be construed as aggression, and the math of two witches and one vampire was in our favor by a large margin. I smiled, disarmingly, but said nothing to disabuse our visitor of my potentially violent nature. "Collect," she ground out. The name was uttered as a curse, and there were high spots of color on her cheeks. So, vampires could flush with anger. Good to know. "And where are you from, Colette?" I asked, still polite. She sagged a bit, but it was an act. Vampires don't admit defeat. They negotiate trick or cheat. It's in their nature. Still, she spoke. "Originally, or now?"
How about both? I asked. My charms winked ominously in the lights, turning on one at a time to facilitate the crowd's departure.
As if you would understand, Colette began,
but Gran's noise of derision interrupted her. Gran stepped to within a pace of the vampire and pointed to her hand, which was held out, palm up.
I want you to look here, Colette, so that there can be no further misunderstandings.
Without waiting for an answer, Gran began to sketch in the air above her hand. In a series of elegant looping motions, I watched her long fingers trace some unknown shape in the air. A filament of golden light trailed behind her fingertip, and in seconds, a fairly good, if cartoonish, sun with rays and a circle around it had taken form.
I didn't know you could draw, Gran. I smiled, and she rewarded me with a narrow gaze.
Don't patronize me, Carly. I know my limitations.
With a grin, she pursed her lips and blew at the sculpture of light, setting the sun and its accompanying rays adrift. Toward Colette. The vampire sneered, but it was a nervous, defensive noise, and then the sun landed on her chest with a sizzle. Colette's gasp of pain was so vivid I felt tears spring to my own eyes before I could control my emotions. The stench was ungodly, somewhere between rotted meat and hot pavement, and Colette's back arched in pain as she staggered and slumped to the ground without another word. Gran smiled beatifically at the creature, who had once been human, but now was only worthy of Gran's most devious scorn. Or so I thought. With a tender gesture, Gran extended a hand to Colette, who quite naturally regarded her with open hostility and suspicion.
I won't use my magic again, unless you prove to be difficult. I don't enjoy inflicting pain, as I can surmise that your whole existence is predicated upon finding a way to live with the unnatural horror of your own curse. Do you understand, Colette? I pity you. I don't hate you. Now, answer my Carly so that we may bring a close to this unpleasant discussion.
Gran pulled Colette upright and stepped back, folding her hands in a sign of peace. It took a long moment for the vampire's natural healing ability to remove any effects of Gran's spell. I made a note to ask her about that bit of magic. It was damned impressive and utterly new to me. Even in her eighth decade, she was teaching me that it was wrong to think I knew everything about her. I loved her even more for that. Colette was no coward, of that much I was certain. Her eyes glinted with candle flame as she concluded an internal dialogue filled with ifs and buts, all of which led her to decide that, for the moment, talking was better than being treated to another of Gran's impromptu tanning bed sessions.
Ontario.
One word ground out between her pretty little fangs, but it was a start. When Gran and I flanked her and indicated she should start walking away from the tent and prying eyes, Colette put on a game face and stared straight forward. I noticed that she was a delicate woman, who had likely been turned just into adulthood. She was, like all vampires, a shameful waste of a good person, and my heart softened until her long fingers flexed unconsciously. That predatory gesture shattered my temporary goodwill, and I steeled myself for the next few minutes. What part of Ontario, Colette? It's a big place, I asked, seeing Gran's nod of approval. We had an unspoken moment that could best be summed up as, keep her talking.
I'm not alone, you know. Yes, you can hustle me out of there, but I am not without connections.
There was a desperate hint to her protest, and I knew that she was most certainly on her own. That was a wedge, and I knew that we could use it against her to our benefit, but only if we acted quickly. With each step into the breezy night air, we were further away from the imaginary safety of a crowd. I say imaginary because magical beings have no compunctions about stealing victims anywhere at any time. There are no limitations to what predators will do when they think that their escape is guaranteed, and a vampire was among the apex killers associated with the ever after. Gran nodded, hemming Colette with her presence as I took the lead. There was something unnerving about how calm Gran could be, but then I remembered she was on the side of the angels, and a smile pulled at my lips. It was time to get down to business. We know that you're not only alone, but in conflict with other vampires who are here. It's your nature. So, I waved an airy hand as if it was already common knowledge that she was going to spill the proverbial beans. In the interest of time and your own safety, why don't you tell us your reason for being here tonight? Specifically, why this circus in our town? Colette's fine blonde brows rose at my declaration that we owned the town. We don't, technically, but the protection of Halfway is our concern, so I'm comfy using that terminology. Plus, I didn't really care what some Canadian fanger thought of our powers. Don't get me wrong, Canadians are delightful, but when they eat people, not so much. Not even my close, personal love affair with Canadian maple syrup could overcome a general disdain for compulsive cannibalism and blood drinking. Although, on some mornings, when the waffles are perfect, it's a tight race. As I said, I'm hardly alone. But yes, I am in competition with others here. She looked at Gran, then shrugged in some form of acceptance. I wasn't always in this position. None of us were. Her words were bitter and clipped. What position is that? I asked. Better to keep things short. Being, like, a dog. Having no clan. Drops of blood appeared on her lip where she bit down with barely contained anger. Before you continue with your incessant questions, my clan is gone, as is that of Leopold. The vampire you are with in the stands? I asked. Gran tilted her head with great interest. Something was missing from this entire narrative. Yes, he's Austrian, but has been here, or rather in Canada, for quite some time. He too is without a place in our hierarchy, and it's a dangerous way to exist. Colette admitted. I want to believe you. Truly, I do. Gran's voice was even, but her eyes twinkled with curiosity. She sighed, flicking her fingers downward at the earth. If this Leopold is from Austria, and you are from Ontario, then I presume that you made arrangements for safe travel? What do you mean? Colette stiffened. She didn't like the question, because she didn't know the answer. I did. I think what my grandmother wants to know is, who helped you cross all of that running water? I asked. Colette flinched, as if struck. Ah, so she isn't alone. I met Gran's eyes and caught her minuscule nod to go on. You must have support here, in some shape or another, and therefore you aren't alone. I let my charms jingle ominously, although they sounded more or less like laughing fay. It was tough to come off as a badass when your primary weapon sounded like a metallic giggle. So, you're lying, and that's a problem. You see our situation? Gran chuckled, a modest noise that she accompanied with a friendly grin as her hands began to wave again. Light began to accrue in the palm of her left hand, small at first, but growing to a tennis ball-sized globe of soft golden light. It hung an inch from her skin, swirling slowly in a spin that cast dancing shadows and light across our faces like a guttering candle. The vampire, Colette, Gran whispered at the ball of sunlight. Her word caused the light to pulse, flicker in recognition, and then settle into a modest, yellow color somewhere between straw and gold. She smiled apologetically at the vampire, who knew that running was now suicide. I didn't know that Gran could make smart bombs, and certainly not any weapons that were so pretty to look at. The spell was now bound to Colette by her name, a power that was akin to the pattern of her soul. She could no more outrun the light than one can avoid their own shadow. Her die was cast. The realization of the spell's intent landed on Colette like a blow. I swear her skin rippled with anger. But she mastered her emotions and looked at Gran, and then me, with a glare that was hotter than an iron worker's furnace. After a silence that was awkward,